With the permission of the president of this evening, I am speaking seated. It's a little more informal than my standing up and talking from the altitude which I can reach. As no particular subject has been assigned to me, I will speak on various points concerning our work as theosophists and the Theosophical Society. The Theosophical Society is, in many respects, a unique organization. Not only does it function now or has functioned in all the countries of the world, so, very truly an international body, but it has members who belong to the different religions of the world, whose backgrounds of culture and traditions are very, very different. There are also people of different races, including Africans. The people of the Aryan race, not many of the Mongolian races, but various other racial and ethnic types. Therefore, it is not possible for any lodge or section fully to represent the character of this society. Also, theosophy is, in various respects, a philosophy of a unique nature. The only plank to which we hold as a society is that of the universal brotherhood of humanity, irrespective of all those distinctions which are cited in the first object of the society. Otherwise, the member is left absolutely free to study and investigate along the lines which are mentioned in the second and third objects. I think that in itself is a very striking feature of the work of the society, that we should leave our members completely free in their thought, except for subscribing to this practical and ethical doctrine of universal brotherhood. It is a free organization in the fullest sense of the term. Anyone who accepts these three objects can come into the organization, yet the organization has a very definite and positive character, and it assumes this character from the truths which are accepted by the very large majority of its members and propagated by every lodge and every section. But the acceptance of these truths is on account of a free response on the part of the members to those truths, because nothing is imposed upon them from above. There is no official paper or document which defines theosophy, which states such and such are the principles or truths in which theosophists must believe. Yet, being left, maintaining this freedom, yet at the same time, it has been able to consolidate itself on a certain basis, And as I said, this basis consists of truths which have been put before the members by our founder H.P. Blavatsky and others, and the members, out of their own free judgment, have responded to those truths and accepted them to a less or in a less or greater degree. When a truth is placed before the human mind, and if that mind is free from prejudice, superstition or fear, then the truth has always an irresistible attraction to that mind. There is a certain relation between truth and the consciousness of man when that consciousness is purged of all impediments, that is to say, of all preconceived notions and of all tendencies opposed to the reception of the truth. Now, to bring about this freedom of the human mind and also to proclaim the essential truths of the philosophy which most of us accept was the special mission of Madame Blavatsky. She was opposed in her time both to modern science, that is to say, the ideas of modern science as which obtained at that time, and also to religion as it was believed in and practiced. But since then, science has made revolutionary advances which have completely altered the scientific picture of the universe. Having come into the possession of a much wider field of knowledge, science is today much more tentative and less certain. And if we think of the various religions, whether you think of Hinduism in India or Christianity in its different forms in the Christian world, you find that there is much less of bigotry in these days. And there is also, amongst thoughtful Christians, an element of mysticism which colors their thinking. So we see that the world has changed very much during the last 85 years, not merely on account of the scientific technology which has come into human use, not merely the completely different setting which has been created for man, but also in his mode of thinking, which is very much more reasonable at present than it used to be. Today there is a possibility, although the realization of it must be considered still remote, of a kind of world religion amongst all the thoughtful peoples of the world, of which the existing religions will be perhaps facets, or the world religion would rest upon the basis of the essential truths of all the existing religions of the world. In fact, theosophy has been described as the wisdom religion by HPB, a religion which is a wisdom. It is not, of course, a religion in the ordinary sense. Now and then the question arises, especially when we ask for exemption from taxes, whether the Theosophical Society is a religious body. Is theosophy a religion, or is it merely a kind of a philosophy? Well, it is very difficult to answer that question. It is not a religion in the ordinary sense, but it is concerned with all those matters with which every religion concerns itself, namely the origin of man, his destiny, how he should conduct himself in this world, what are the ideals which should guide him, what should be his relation to his fellow human beings, and also to what we call God. Although this word God is capable of being understood by different people in different ways. If you think of Buddhism, for instance, which is one of the great religions of the world, there is no God conception in that religion. The idea of a universal and an invariable law absolutely takes the place of God. Even man, it is said, is the nature of man rests upon a certain law which is within himself. And this law of his being, it might be said, perhaps this is my interpretation of the Buddhistic idea, and it may not be acknowledged to be correct by various orthodox Buddhists. There is a certain law of one's own being which completely supersedes that self, which is a product of so many memories and which divides a person from all others. Anyhow, the central concept in Buddhism is that of a law which is eternal and which takes the place of the self, which the Lord Buddha declared to be a mythical notion, because it is compounded of various factors arising from his past experience. But I shall not go into that. That is quite a side path. Now, theosophy may be described in various ways. Of course, the literal meaning is the divine wisdom. So when we call our society the Theosophical Society, there is the assumption that there is such a thing as theosophy. Therefore, there is an implicit recognition of a certain element or principle which is quite outside the world of our normal experience. So there is that recognition, even though theosophy is not defined, has not been crystallized in any set form. And theosophy has also been described or called the science of the self. The self being the center of consciousness in each living thing, in each human constitution. Different from that notion of a self which separates us from others, which the Lord Buddha called a myth or an illusion, a made-up notion. Not a notion that exists in the true nature of things, but as man is subject to so many illusions, all these illusions center in that fundamental illusion of your separateness, which is due to the way he thinks. Of course, so far as we ourselves are concerned, since we do not know what this divine or transcendental wisdom is, from our point of view, theosophy may be regarded as a synthesis of truth wherever you may find it, whether you find it in science or any of the philosophies or any religious system. It doesn't matter where you find the truth. The truth which you find anywhere is part of the total truth, which is theosophy. But in the Theosophical Society, our attitude towards this wisdom must be not a dogmatic attitude, because we have to realize that we have not arrived at the finality of knowledge or wisdom. We have always to have a mind which is open to the truth. In every issue of the Theosophist, there is a statement which is printed in the first page, in which it is stated that the members of the Theosophical Society are students or learners. we should not at any time forget that fact that there are many things in heaven and earth which perhaps even our philosophy doesn't dream of, and therefore we have to keep our hearts and minds accessible to any light that may come from any quarter. Even if we think of such well-known doctrines, when I say well-known, I mean amongst theosophists, as reincarnation and karma, I think it may be possible to look at this, say, the process of reincarnation from a somewhat different point of view from which we look at it normally. There may be the possibility of looking at it from above, that is to say from within, and not as we usually do, from without. All our knowledge, which is a knowing by the mind, must be regarded as superficial, because manas, or the mind, manas is the Sanskrit term, in some ways it is better than the mind. It is a faculty which only moves towards knowledge. It doesn't know the thing itself, but it interprets the thing by means of vibrations or in some other way through inference and so on. So there is always a movement towards knowing a thing. If I look at you and say, you look like this, you are dressed in such and such colors and so on, you have this expression on the face, all that is really, when you come to think of it, an interpretation by my mind of certain impressions that are raining upon me from the particular quarter in space which you occupy. So we see that mind in itself is not an instrument of knowledge as people usually regard it. To know a thing, you must absolutely hit the truth. You must be one with the truth, one with the thing which you want to know. But the mind always keeps at a distance and translates the impressions which it receives into various images and ideas. So all the mental knowledge that we possess must necessarily be knowledge from a distance and not knowledge of the intrinsic truth of things. It is knowledge by translation of impressions or by inference. If we can only realize this fact, that this instrument of which we are so proud and which has been able to accomplish many wonders in the physical world is one which is beset with limitations, and what we know is more the appearance or the surface of things than what is behind that surface, what is behind that appearance. If we keep this in mind, perhaps we would all be much humbler than we are at present, and there will be the possibility of learning, which many people deny themselves because they are so sure that they are already very learned, that they know everything in its absolute truth. I think that we all need, in understanding theosophy, in presenting theosophy, in speaking to the public, to keep things in the right perspective, so that in our own minds, what is of fundamental value has its proper place amidst a number of details with which we might have loaded our brains. We must discriminate between various things which are mistaken for what might be termed pure wisdom or spirituality. If we think of psychism, mediumship, and things of that sort, we can see how utterly different they are from that inner realization which alone establishes you in the center of your being, which is true spiritual realization. The world will not be saved by any amount of psychic revelation, although it has its place and value. I do not say it is of no value. But suppose you tell me all kinds of things which I don't see. Well, what of that? Am I going to be very different in my action, in my behavior, in my attitude towards people, or in facing various life problems of life and situation? I do not think the world will be saved in that way. It's all interesting, just as so many things in nature are interesting. You can study all that. But the world will be saved by what? I can mention to you some very simple things. By genuine kindness. Suppose you had that spirit of kindness in the hearts of many, many people. Do you think there will be wars or concentration camps or the interrogation of prisoners about which we read in newspapers? Or all those cruelties, I was going to say abominable cruelties, I am not used to strong language, but let me use it. All those cruelties which have become a commonplace of our times. We think nothing of that. So I feel that what is really needed is this spirit of genuine kindness, purity in living, because that is essential. It means that you live in such a way that you do not develop any kind of raging thirst for things which can never satisfy you, like a cholera patient who has a thirst which can never be satisfied. If we are in that kind of psychic condition, wanting so many things which will eventually prove to be dust and ashes in our mouth, then surely that is a cause of torment rather than of happiness. I think there has to be a certain readiness to examine one's own superstitions and illusions. All these things are necessary, and this is what will save the world. A different attitude towards all things, an attitude of willing to learn, to examine your own ideas, see what is really worthwhile in life, and so on. We must remember that the Theosophical movement is essentially a spiritual impulse which has opened the way for those forces which would shape the future. Of course, when I say open the way for those forces, that what I mean is it has given to people all over the world a spiritual vision, a vision of what is spirituality, which is very different from so many things with which people confuse it. The members of the Theosophical Society are mostly ordinary people. They are not extraordinarily clever or learned or influential people. But nevertheless, they have responded to the message of Theosophy. They have responded to certain forces which have been released through this movement. And so long as they are able to respond to the beauty of Theosophy, they will be able to be the necessary channel for these forces. HPB, in Key to Theosophy, said in her own vigorous and graphic language that the society must be careful not to be sandbanked by sectarianism or dogma. I am not recollecting her exact words. Now, that is a thing that we have to be aware of. But that does not mean that when we know something of the truth of things, we should not speak about it or write about it. It must not be understood in that sense. Because the world needs Theosophy as much as ever before. When I say Theosophy, I mean the fundamental truths, the essential things in Theosophy. Not many details with regard to which people may differ. There has been a great deal of controversy over the question whether Mars and Mercury belong to this earth chain or whether they are units of other independent chains. But not being in a position to resolve that question myself, I remain perfectly happy without forming any opinion on that subject. I do not think I am going to lose a night's sleep over this question whether Mars belonged to the Earth chain or to some other chain. What does it matter to us? When it is possible for us to know, we will find out. So it seems to me that a thing like that is not really so important from the standpoint of our own living, our duties and responsibilities in the world. I don't say that. It may not be interesting to know it. It may be. But since we are not in a position to resolve that question, let us keep our minds in happy suspense, not troubled because we are unable to decide the question immediately on the spot. There are innumerable questions to which we cannot find an answer immediately. So we might as well accept our ignorance of these matters and be perfectly happy. The present period is a period of mental development, and this development has been very, very striking. But you can see that although there have been wonderful advances in the field of, in various fields by modern science, yet generally, if you look at people, you find that this mental development has made them superficial and one-sided. It has caused an intensification of individualism and separateness. I am making these statements. You can see whether they are correct or partially correct or not correct, as the case may be. And so we find, because of this spirit of separatism or individualism, there is so much of suffering and unhappiness in the world, perhaps more than at any previous time, so far as we know. So I feel that there is something which we must do to help in the present situation. We must show people, when I say show people, I mean, first of all, if we understand it ourselves, that the mind is only an instrument and it has its limitations. That there are many other things that people need to realize. If I am asked just to mention a few points, I would say, for instance, the sacredness of life. If only people can feel that life in every living form is divine or sacred. The essential unity of mankind behind all the differences that are on the surface. The way to happiness which lies deeply within oneself and not in various things which are outside oneself. What is meant by true freedom? Freedom of heart, freedom in mind. Not freedom just from this thing or that thing, but freedom in itself. And the meaning of death, and so on. There are so many points on which theosophy sheds a wonderful light. Therefore, is it not our duty to share our understanding, however limited it may be, with other people who perhaps have not come across the views which we hold? But always in our presentation, we must make people feel that theosophy is not a peculiar doctrine. It is not a peculiar doctrine. They must be helped to understand it as the truth of things. Things are so. That is how life is, and that is how life expands, and that is what death means. When you realize that this is the truth, then various other ideas which people have, they are peculiar. Not theosophy is peculiar, but various views which seem to be contradictory to the absolutely logical and reasonable view that we take of things, it is those views which are peculiar. It has been said, it is somewhere in the Bible, the truth shall make you free. it frees us from various superstitions and fears. And it must be presented, I think, in a way which makes it seem, whatever is the truth which we present, we must make it seem that it is related to life and our daily experiences. If you merely talk of something absolutely abstract and unrelated to one's living or one's attitude, then I think that it will have very little of an effect or impact upon people's lives. But if people do not respond to certain things which you put before them, then that truth which you put before them, if truth it be, has to bide its time. So we have to have an element of patience in our natures. We cannot think that by merely waving a theosophical wand, we are going to convert the whole of the world. Of course, we are not doing that. I think that the truth which we put forward will not suffer if we speak out of our own understanding. Whatever that understanding may be, it may be limited. But if you understand that certain things are so, surely you can express your understanding and it will always be of interest to others. The wisdom must be propagated by those who have in them the spirit of the wisdom. That, I think, is much more important than any amount of letter. The spirit of the wisdom means with understanding, understanding of people, understanding of what you say.
It is possible in putting forward our truth to become so dogmatic that you arouse a natural resistance to the manner of presentation and therefore also to the truth. We must be careful always to adopt an approach which is open to new facts, open to new considerations. If somebody puts forward a certain view which we have not come across hitherto, we must be willing to consider it for what it is worth. I think that attitude of mind is essential for the success of our work in the Theosophical Society. HPB gave us to understand that a new effort will be made round about 1875 by the spiritual powers, the inner government of the world. Of course, we do not know anything about it, but she had very considerable knowledge, as we know from her writings. And therefore, I think our task is at the present time must be to prepare for the new impulse. And we can only prepare for the new impulse by having an open mind, being willing to learn, willing to understand. I think we have to have a mind which is open and seeking, not one which is satisfied with itself, feeling that we already know whatever is most important to be known. Open to truth wherever it may be. And we must not take up the attitude which so many people take. This is not in the Quran. Therefore, it's either superfluous or it's completely false. Or this is not in the Bible. Or shall I say, even though this may sound a little shocking perhaps, not to the present group but to some people, this is not in the secret doctrine. After all the whole revelation that has been given through the Mahatma letters and the secret doctrine is only a fragment of the truth. It has been said, I believe, that only a corner of the veil has been lifted. And one of the masters has said that they cannot give out more of the truth because one has to find it out for oneself. So I do not think it would help to adopt that attitude when you come across some other presentation or some other way of looking at a thing, to say that this is not according to our particular Bible, the Theosophical Bible. I can tell you that I came across some years ago a book in a library in London entitled Theosophy of the Upanishads. The Upanishads are part of the Hindu scriptures. It was a beautifully written book, and the author had not cared to give his name, and the book was written before the Theosophical Society was started. He had used the expression theosophy in the title of that book. Of course, we all respect and reverence H.P.B., after whom this lodge is named. And I do not think I yield to anyone in my respect for her. But I think that I don't agree with people who say that the word theosophy, which means truth, theosophy, wisdom or truth, should be restricted to the writings of H.P.B. I think that if we do that, we would be making a sect around those writings. We would be doing precisely that against which H.P.B. administered a warning in her book, Key to Theosophy. The word Sophia in Theosophy means really wisdom. And this wisdom is truth in action. That is wisdom, I think. When there is action according to the truth, that is to say the true nature of things, then you might say it is wise from the standpoint of nature, from the standpoint of reality. The action has to be based upon what is true and not what is merely imagined or an illusion. Wisdom, let me say, is not mere information. When you use the word wisdom, there is a reference in it to action and also to life. Life involves both experiencing and action, because every living thing experiences various things and it is also able to act. So when the action is not based on false premises, on an illusory view of things, then it is wise action or an expression of the wisdom. I say this because we must always remember that wisdom has to manifest in action. I use the word action not in any limited sense, merely to indicate the overt behavior of people, but even thinking and feeling, everything is action, the action of life. Of course, when we say truth, one might ask, truth of what? Because we use the word truth. Truth about what? I would say, truth about life and all its phenomena. That is the truth which we need to know. And that includes truth about ourselves, what we are. Because we are also manifestations of the one life. And the experiencing of this truth in our thinking and the expression of it in action is wisdom. You are wise when your thought is along the lines of truth. And you are wise when your action is in conformity with that truth, when it is an expression of that truth. If the action is based upon various ideas which are fantastic, completely untrue, which are mere superstitions or imaginings out of a heated brain, then surely you cannot call the action wise. So, we might say, wisdom is the action of truth or truth in action. I think that theosophy, for all of us, should not be merely a theosophy of books, whatever those books may be. But it should mean, more than anything else, a way of life and action. If it is that, then we will never become tired of theosophy. You can have information given, and when you have been when you have had all the information, the excitement of it must wear off after a time, and then you will ask, can't we have more information? And then you can have more information and you will tire of that information and we would want still more information. So there is no end to this thirst for information, which merely stimulates and excites the minds of people. But if we can have a different attitude, which is an attitude of creativity, then I think theosophy will not become stale, uninteresting. If you take an artist, if somebody is set out to become an artist, and you show him pictures in a picture gallery, he looks at all the pictures and he will never say, oh, is that all? Can't we have more pictures? You show him more, can't I have more? No, his mind doesn't work like that. Why? Because he is intent upon creating something out of his own genius, out of his own capacity. So if in the same way we can produce or create something valuable, which doesn't necessarily mean you should create something tangible, a painting or a poem or whatever it may be, or produce a lecture. It's not necessarily that. But there should be something created in yourself, within your own being, or the recreation of your own self. If that process has been set in motion by our contact with this wisdom, then I think it will never be old, it will never be stale, we will never weary or tire of it. Because life then will be always an adventure. We will be going forward. We will be learning every day from everything, constantly changing ourselves, modifying our view of things, perfecting our own expression, so that we are engaged in becoming an embodiment of this wisdom. And that is, of course, a tremendous task, but a task which would be fascinating to anyone who undertakes it. So I feel that we must approach this wisdom in that creative spirit. Having learnt of certain things, the spirit of that wisdom must enter into our natures, must enter into our hearts, and it should be able to change our way of life, the way we talk, our relations towards people, what we think of them, how we act in a certain crisis or in a certain difficulty. There is no aspect of life which cannot be modified by theosophy when we understand what theosophy is in its inwardness, in its essence. So, otherwise, if we do not have that spirit, then for us, after a time, theosophy will cease to be exciting, it will become dull and mechanical. So, we really need everywhere, not we need, that is not the right way to put it. There must be everywhere theosophies who illustrate in their living, in their mode of thinking, in their outlook upon life, the creativeness of the wisdom. And when I say creativeness of the wisdom, let us remember that it is not the mind which creates. I do not know whether you will all agree with me. The mind is an artificer. It can do that kind of thing, a certain amount of craftsmanship. But creation, the impulse of creation, springs from somewhere, something which is beyond the mind. Whether it may be a nature or it may be a consciousness, but that goes beyond the mind. That is really the source of creation. Or we might say, put it simply, creation starts from the depths of our being, the deeper nature of ourselves. And when that nature is vivified, you will find that there are sparks flowing from there or rising from there. And it is in that deeper nature, because it is of an entirely different sort from that nature which we present to the world, of which we are conscious, and which has been modified and molded in particular ways by contact with with the external world. So I feel that we should not merely speak things out of books, but we should speak out of our understanding. We must live and act from that deeper nature of ourselves. We must speak from our hearts. We must live from our depths. And it is only when we have been transformed by what we call theosophy in that way that we will find that to be a theosophist is to be a very happy thing. It is to find a way of continual release, because there is the release of something within ourselves which is all the time, so many forces within ourselves which are all the time radiating, which are acting, by which we ourselves are being transformed almost from moment to moment. Even so, even though we may not perceive the process of that transformation, it is only in that way that every theosophist can become a stream of living influence, theosophical influence. It is not necessary for him even to speak many words, but he will be able to become distinguished in a real sense. Distinguished means separated from the mass of people who follow conventional ways, but in that sense that you live differently, you have a different attitude of mind, a different spirit, so that you become naturally distinguished from others. So in that way, all theosophers should be men and women of true distinction, not conceited, not proud. The moment you are proud and conceited, you lose, I think, something of that distinction. The distinction arises naturally, just as when a lion walks, you see a natural dignity. The lion doesn't put on any kind of a pose or he's not seeking to be dignified. There is beauty in so many forms in nature. So you see that these wonderful things, beauty, dignity and so on, airiness, lightness, all kinds of wonderful things you find in nature, they just come into existence out of the processes of life. And it is not possible for any human being to produce those marvels of which nature is capable. But nature can work from within us also. There is a nature within us which is not a nature that has as yet come under the dominion of a limited conditioned mind. And if that deeper nature can be vivified in ourselves, then it will also produce marvels. But those marvels will be made manifest through our life, in all our ways, and also through our minds. And I feel that the Theosophical Society has great possibilities, provided we have the right approach, provided we understand what these possibilities are and how to realize them. Otherwise, we are merely humdrum theosophists or routine theosophists or theosophists merely wearing a label as we do at convention time. But I think that without any kind of a label, we should be able to get out of the ruts in which we are normally sunk, the ruts of thought, the ruts of behavior and so on, and we should be able to look upon all things and act from a center which is out of our normal grooves. That is to say, we must be able to look upon everything in life, whether it's something that you read in a newspaper or a domestic situation or a problem in the lodge or whatever it may be, or a personal problem. We should be able to look upon all that and approach everything from a new point of view, which is not merely a repetition of the old processes of thought. I think that is possible for everyone to some little extent. We can do that. If we understand that there are these possibilities, they will inevitably be realized in due course. The very fact that we think that a certain thing is possible and desirable shows that already there has sprung into existence a certain impulse within you which gives you that realization. So I feel that the Theosophical Society will be in the future what we make of it now. It may be that there is a certain momentum which comes from the past, but at the same time we should not merely live upon the past or upon hopes for the future which might have been declared by somebody. We must realize that we are the trustees for this work, just for the time being, and therefore we must discharge our trust in the best manner possible and hand over to others who may come after us a society which is full of life, which is full of vigor, in which each one is trying to live a different kind of life, who is trying to think along lines of truth and not merely convention and superstition. That, I feel, is the work to which we are all called. I think I have orated for about an hour and I might stop here.